Well, hi there, Jonathan Doyle with you for the weekly podcast. As always, great to have your time. This is going to be a big one. There's a lot of stuff in here, and I just know that some of it's going to resonate with you. It's been a big few weeks. My new book went to 1,000 people around the world, and it's been really cool just to see some of the feedback, especially from the NFL in the States. It's been great to hear from some of the senior coaches there and get their feedback, and just emails coming in as the book goes out. So if you haven't got a copy yet, make sure you come across and grab a copy of Bridging the Gap off the website. If you're hearing this on iTunes or somewhere else, just come across to jonathandoyle.co and grab yourself a copy. So, heaps to talk about. It's really quite a few different things this week. Often I try and stay focused on a single topic, and we're going to drill down to a couple of big ones, but there's definitely a few bits and pieces. And the first thing I wanted to share was just some books I've been reading lately. If you're a regular listener, you know I'm a huge, voracious reader. It's also a cause of stress because the internet's just ruined everything. So now the minute I see a book or hear of a book, I buy it. And on my bedside table or in my office, there's just this stack. But I'm getting more diligent and more focused on making time for the books that really matter. And, you know, just on that, when you find something in your life that you tell yourself matters, I mean, how often do we say, X is really important to me, but we just don't get to X because everything else gets in the way. So I just want to encourage you that if something matters to you, like for me, reading, I've had to be very disciplined and quite tough on myself to make that time, because the way things happen is your brain will always have a story. You'll always have a story about why you can't do something. You know, I've just got to do this, and I've just, the kids this, and this person at work, and I've just got to check this and respond to this. And before we know it, we've missed out on the things that matter to us. So as I'm doing with reading, you've just got to make that time. You've got to honor yourself, recognize the priorities, and just do what really matters, and just block that time out. So this week, I just finished Bill McDermott's book called Winner's Dream. And, you know, I was in a bookshop, I saw it, had some great endorsements on the back, and I was just like, okay, I'll read that. And a lot of business books, you're like, blah, 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 blah. You know, there's just a lot of rehash stuff, and the person's just blowing their own trumpet. But this guy was really interesting. Bill McDermott started at Xerox, the famous copier company, and he sort of real, just classic American story of, you know, just a sales guy, real hustler, who rose up through Xerox and ended up becoming the global CEO for SAP. And, you know, just a really fascinating read about a person who, I think he really valued people. The book talks a lot about teams and just motivating people, and he really comes across as somebody that, you know, walks their talk and builds a great community. And there was one key line in it that I really liked, and this could be useful to you if you lead anybody. I mean, we all lead someone. If you're a parent, you're leading your kids. If you're in business, you're leading people somewhere. We've all got some place in life where we have interactions with others and leadership. And Bill McDermott had this single line that really stuck with me, and he said, "Because I speak without judgment, people listen without fear." Hear that again? "Because I speak without judgment, people listen without fear." So when he was giving feedback or working with difficult situations, he wouldn't judge the person. He wouldn't get personal and carry on swearing and yelling. So he developed a culture around him where, because he didn't attack people, people began to relax and they could listen openly to what he had to say. So that's a great line. "Because I speak without judgment, people listen without fear." So if you're in sales, if you're in management, if you're in leadership, I recommend grabbing a copy of Bill McDermott's book, Winner's Dream. The other book I'm reading at the moment is called Daring Greatly, which is really quite a famous book. I don't know how to pronounce this lady's first name. I think it's Brené. It's spelled B-R-E-N-E. I'm going to have to find out, but it's Brené Brown. She's on the TED Talks, and she writes about shame and vulnerability, and it's a really challenging, moving book, and I've just been really enjoying that. So there's a couple of great books, Daring Greatly by Brené Brown and Bill McDermott's book, Winner's Dream. So if you're a reader, you want to grow, grab a copy of those. Now, pressing on, we have got some stuff here this week. Now, this is going to sound really weird, right? But I wrote the book Bridging the Gap, and I have these 8 strategies in the book. There's a weird thing as an author is that you're constantly going, well, am I living these? You know, like I talk about them, I write about them. Do I actually live them? And without in any way being arrogant, I really try to. And I try to constantly reflect on them and act them out and, you know, live them in my life. But this week, there was one particular strategy in the book that I did, which had an amazing result. And I want to share this with you. I'm really excited because it's deep proof to me that these principles work. And it's not rocket science, but I did something. I share it with you in 2 seconds. And it really worked. And I want to just encourage you to try these, because I wrote a chapter in the book about asking for what you want. Now, the idea originally came to me when I read a book from the dean of the Harvard Business School. And she was simply reflecting that entrepreneurs and leaders ask. She just said that all her experience with entrepreneurs and leaders was that they get really good at asking for what they want. They just step up, put their hand up and say, I want this. This matters to me. This is what I want. And it's a simple idea, but a really powerful one. And many of us in our life just, you know, we're conditioned to not ask for what we want. You know, don't rock the boat, don't upset people, and just don't put your hand up and just speak it out. And so this week, here's the background. I wanted to take Karen, myself, and the kids to this amazing conference. You know, tens of thousands of people go to this amazing event every year. We've never been, we've always wanted to go, and so I thought, look, this year I'm stepping out, and I've stepped out in so many ways this year. I thought, we're going to this conference. Now, straight away, the minute you step out to do something important or big, the voices in your brain start. All this, you know, it'll be too busy, and the kids will get tired, and it'll be awful. And so first of all, I don't want to, this will happen to you, so listen to this, because this is how your brain works too. When you step out to do something, all the voices start. All the voices that want to drag you straight back to that comfort zone. And if you haven't heard the Comfort Zone podcast, just go back a couple of episodes, you'll find it. So here I am with this, you know, these voices, but I kept going and just, you know, we said to Karen, we're going to do this, we're going to go to the conference. So once you commit, what happens next? First the voices, then the problems, all the reasons and the problems. You can't do it. So the problem for us was accommodation. We decided to go pretty late. And all of a sudden it was like, man, you know, this is going to be really tricky. Like, how are we going to do this? There's going to be nowhere to get accommodation because the conference is so big that basically every hotel for miles is completely booked. It's a difficult city to travel in. And I got, you know, little kids. And I thought, oh no, this is going to be impossible. Now, suddenly I remembered a place near this conference venue that we had stayed years before we had kids. And it's owned by a big academic institution, and I'm not going to name it, but it's a pretty uptight, serious kind of place. And I'm like, wow, okay, well, I wonder what would happen if we asked if we could stay there again. Now, the difference is last time we stayed there, we were studying and we were attending lectures and, you know, we had no children and they had accommodation there for academics and people visiting. And I thought, well, I guess what's the worst you could do? You know, in the book I said the worst that can happen when you say no, when you ask, is that people say no. So I wrote this email to the dean and, you know, I thought I could write this big formal letter and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I thought, you know what, I'm just going to write it from the heart. And I spelled things out. I said, look, we got little kids this time. I said, my mother's going to come and help us, but we got little kids. And I know you've got all these academics walking around everywhere and it'll all be, you know, I just spelled it all out. But I said it would be a huge help. We can't find anywhere else and it'd be a great blessing to us. And, you know, the next thing that happened is really cool, right? The email bounces about 50 times. I kept sending it, different accounts bounced. Finally found the rector's, the dean's personal email and then sent this out. And it was amazing. I got this, I was waiting for this, you know, really official email back saying it would be completely inappropriate for you to stay and this was not acceptable. I got this beautiful email saying, we'd love to have you, no problem at all. They said, the other students and the academics are going to be away anyway. The place will be just about empty and we'd love you to stay and no problem, just contact this person and we'll get it all sorted for you. I almost fell off my chair. I was like, this is beyond awesome, right? This is like, you got to understand, this is a big global conference and getting anywhere near it so hard. And we are now literally 10 minutes walking distance from the front door of the conference in this amazing accommodation with the kids. Everything's rocking. And I'm like, wow, I did it. I asked for what I want and it worked. So I don't know if that sounds profound to you. It sure is profound to me because I know the details of all this, but I want to encourage you, ask for what you want. What are you not asking for at the moment? You know, what are you just not actually, there's something that you want or need or would be a blessing to you or help you grow that you're not asking for, do it. You know, unless you're living in some absolutely crazy third world country where like North Korea, you're not going to get arrested or shot or, you know, have your assets stripped because you asked for something. So what are you not asking for? And this will encourage you because the worst that'll happen is no. The worst that'll happen is no. Okay. Now, what I'm going to do next is talk about an email that I got, so which was really cool, just a couple of nights ago. I want to protect this person's privacy. This person was part of an international sporting team at a very high level, attending a selection event to make it into the national team at a very high level. So just picture a sport person dedicated to it their whole life, and here they are at this event. And they emailed me and said, hey, I heard your podcast on stress. I got this podcast I did ages ago on stress, which I really recommend listening to. But they'd somehow come across it just through a Google search, and they gave me this wonderful feedback. So if you're listening to this, you know who you are. So thank you very much. I loved getting your email. But it really touched something in me, and I knew that I wanted to share a little bit of their story and my story and how it'll help you. Basically, their question was, they get very stressed before big selection events. And why wouldn't they? This is their whole life. This is something they've done for years and years and years, and they get really nervous. So let's talk about you. There'll be things that you've done, or events, or job interviews, or sporting events, or social events where you get really nervous. So really what we're talking about is, how do you deal with stress? And how do you deal with what we're going to call performance anxiety? Now, that could be a job interview, going out on a date. That could be, any area where you're stepping up to be kind of appraised or to be, reviewed, and you're freaked out. So what really was humbling about this person's email was that they really are operating at an international level, at a very high level. So when I read their email, I was like, but hang on, wouldn't you have access to the world's greatest sports psychologists and all this stuff? And it just brought home to me that we're all human, and we all carry so many challenges and stuff, and we're all sort of swimming together. So let's talk about it. Let's talk about, how do you and they and me deal with things like stress and performance anxiety? Well, the first big thing is that I am an expert in being freaked out. So for most of my life, anxiety, stress, being overstressed was pretty much my default mechanism. Partially genetic, a little bit of a family history of being highly strung and a little anxious. And then I just decided that I'd take that to a whole new level of excellence. And stress and anxiety, for me and trying to perform at a really high level, especially with speaking, for me with, over 300,000 people I've spoken to, for a lot of that time, I did an amazing job, but I was so strung out and stressed trying to be perfect all the time. And I thought of one example of how this has affected me was when I was in high school. I was playing rugby at a high level, and my anxiety was extraordinary. My stress before games, we'd have good crowds, and my whole life kind of had collapsed into this one little area that mattered to me, which was playing rugby at a high level and being stressed out. And so what I kind of did is, in my head back then, I had this sort of, an algorithm, which was like, to play really well at rugby, I need to be really dominant and aggressive. So I've got to get really psyched up, really pumped up. And so, days before, I would start listening to, heavy metal and getting pumped up and visualizing stuff. And long story short, I basically, if there was a right way to prepare for a game, I was about as far from that as you can possibly imagine. There was no way to get it more wrong. So really simply, I'm somebody who needs to dial down their stress all the time. So here I was in high school trying every trick I could find to get myself into more of an agitated state. So it was absolutely extraordinary. So that I got it that wrong, and that nobody sort of stepped in and spoke to me about it. So the first thing I want you to understand about sort of stress and anxiety is to really understand your own personality type. There are people who can get themselves pumped up and it really works for them. But there's tons of us that really shouldn't do that, that should really learn how to dial things down. I saw this years later when I was coaching. I was in England and I was coaching rugby, and I was working with this great team. And I remember giving them this big speech before the game, and I can see this picture so clearly now. I could see players in the room who were really responding to my kind of motivational talk. You could see them, their body posture and breathing patterns. And I remember looking at this one guy who was looking like a rabbit in the headlights, and he was so freaked out. And I learned, working with him over a few months, that what he needed was to be incredibly calm. He needed to walk out there like the absolute Iceman. So it really taught me a lesson that all of us are going to have a different default mechanism. So if you're going to a job interview, date, appraisal, whatever it is, You've got to own who you are and be at peace with the truth of who you are and what gets you in the right state. So that's the goal, right? The goal is to be in this right state before a peak event. So what's the right state? Well, I'm glad you asked, because it's been documented really closely. And I think I've got this back in my stress podcast. It's called the Yerkes-Dodson Law. And it was extensive research that basically said this: you don't want to be stress-free. The goal is not to be completely chilled with no stress. You don't want that. If you do that, you actually underperform. And of course, the other side is you don't want to be hyper-stressed, because the research is clear. If you're overstimulated, you make mistakes and you don't read situations properly. So what you're looking for is this midpoint of just a little bit of arousal and stress and a bit of calm. So this midpoint. I'll give you an example. Think of a brain surgeon. You got a brain surgeon walking in to operate on your brain. You don't want somebody that is stressed out of their mind. You don't want someone walking in going, oh my gosh, this is brain surgery, don't get this wrong, who's really stressed, who's had 15 cups of coffee. You don't want that. At the same time, you don't really want someone walking in who's just going, yeah, this is fine, I've done this 1,000 times, you know, just poke around in here, you know, they're listening to, you know, Jack Johnson music, they're wearing a Hawaiian shirt. You don't want that. You want, you know, a guy who is just confident in their gift and in the right arousal state, to be focused but calm at the same time. So let's review. We all get stressed and we all get performance anxiety at some point. The first thing you have to do is really identify and own your personality type. Do you get easily aroused and you get anxious really fast, or are you a really chill cat and you just take ages to get there? So if you're a really hyperstimulated type, then you've got to dial it down. Music is really powerful. Breathing, we could do a whole podcast on just having, you know, that deep breathing happening, just being calm. Now, the other thing, looking back to this email this person sent me, is why do we get so freaked out in the first place? You know, we've all been to a job interview, right? And how nervous can we get? You know, you're walking in and we get nervous for a couple of reasons. One is, you know, we're highly social creatures still. And even if you're not conscious of it, there's always a desire for connection and relationship with people. We want people to like us. We want to walk in. We want to feel rapport. We want to feel in sync with people. We want to just connect. So the first thing is we get nervous, because we're like, will these people like me? Will I be accepted into this social grouping? It might be, you know, a new club, or it might be a new social peer group, or it might be a job interview. Even if there's just three people you never met, the first reason we get anxious is we want acceptance. We want them to like us. The next major reason is, you know, is really comes to me from one of the most powerful books I ever read, which was Dorothy Rowe's book. She's a brilliant cognitive behavioral specialist and clinical psychologist. And she talks about psychic annihilation, which is that our deepest sort of psychological fear is what she calls psychic annihilation, which is that we will be somehow obliterated. Our self, our deep internal sense of self, will be overwhelmed and wiped out. And that sounds really dramatic, but think of a job interview again, because most of us can, you know, most of you will remember having been to one, is that we fear that we'll walk in, we won't be enough, we'll be embarrassed or caught out, or we'll fail, and that will just wipe out our sense of who we are. And it's at a sort of subconscious level, it's terrifying. And you go, but I don't feel terrified. No, not consciously. But there's this internal sense. That's where this fear is. It's like, well, you know, come back to this person's email. They're going to this big selection event. What if they fail? And the reason they get so terrified, and the reason we can all get so strung out, is really simple. We've linked our performance to our identity. Now, this has been a long podcast, but this is the real gold here. You must not in life, and I want you to trust me now, because more than anyone I know, I've done this for years, and it's cost a lot. Do not link your performance in any area of life to your core identity. Now, if you make your job or your sport or your performance on a given game day, or how you're going as a parent on any given day, or a spouse, if you link how you perform on any given day to who you are in your core, then that's dangerous, because we have bad days. We have days when we don't perform. So this is really deep stuff. Don't link how you perform anywhere to identity. You go, well, some of you will be going, but this is ridiculous. You know, I'm a famous this, or I'm brilliant at that, and everyone says I'm so good at this. If I wasn't good at this, then that wouldn't be me. I'd be a different person. Well, complex, huh? But stay with me. What I want you to do is stop linking your performance to your identity, but do this. Just bring your gift, yourself, and your passion. Just bring who you are. So I want to come back now again to that email from this sporting person. I want to say to them, look, you can't worry about whether or not you'll get it right. What you have to do is immerse yourself in the moment and love what you do. They got into this sport and they obviously love the sport. So what you have to do is just be in there and enjoy that moment, because otherwise you'll learn to hate it and you'll resent it and you'll just be miserable. So you've just got to bring who you are, trust me. So for me now speaking, right, I used to be on stage going, nail the perfect opening, have the perfect posture, you know, make all this eye contact, do that, shape the room, just create the dynamic. And it's exhausting. And now I'm just like, at this age, I'm working with great people who've helped me and growing. I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to stand on this stage. I'm going to bring my passion. I'm going to bring my enthusiasm and bring my gift. And if that gift isn't good enough, then that's okay, because I've still got me and I got people that love me and I can find something else to do. Like, I just want to bless people and liberate people's potential and just help them. So Wayne Dyer says it really beautifully in three words. He says, get off outcome. Listen to that, get off outcome. You know, we get so focused on outcome. Like this person who sent me the email, they're so focused on the outcome. What if I don't? What if I can't? What if I don't get it perfect? Well, that's outcome focused, isn't it? You're totally focused. You know, imagine going into a job interview and you go, I've got to get this job. And some of you will go, well, that's the point of a job interview, isn't it? Like, I'm going, no, the point of a job interview is just to go in and bring your best. And because it could be a terrible job, it might be the worst job you ever get, and maybe you don't want to get it, and you don't even know that. But if you just come in and be who you are and answer the questions the best you can, you get off outcome, then you can relax. And I want to bring that back to the Yerkes-Dodson law, because when you're in that relaxed place of just acceptance and you're comfortable, that's when you do your best stuff. So, wow, isn't there a lot there? Like, but I want you to trust me that I've lived it, and I want to summarize it again quickly. We fear failing in our outcomes because of performance anxiety, because we link what we do to the core self of our identity. And you are not what you do. At your deepest level of your identity, you're a child of God. You know, God wanted you to be here. You have incredible dignity, value, and worth because you're unrepeatable, because people love you, because you have family, because you matter, because you laugh the way you do. You have all these attributes that make you special, not what you do. Yes, what you do is important and it fills out who you are and it's a blessing to the world, but if you live your life linking yourself to what you do, you're going to get miserable, because the minute you can't do it perfectly, or the minute somebody stops validating you for doing it, your identity's under threat and you'll freak out. And trust me, I've learned this. It's just so stupid that it took me this long. But you can learn it now. Just love what you do. You know, learn to love being a parent. Learn to just enjoy being a spouse or a boyfriend or a girlfriend or an employee, and operate in your gift. Operate in your gift. Don't operate out of a fear paradigm of failure, because if you fail, no one will love you. It's a crap way to live. Don't you realize, how many people do you see in Hollywood? How many international sports stars do you see who are snorting coke in the bathroom every 5 minutes because they can't hold their psyche together? You know, once you become famous and you just totally build your identity on staying famous and staying at the top, how many people just lose it when they're not that person anymore? So you don't want to set yourself up for that kind of failure. Last thing I want to give you is, I'm a huge fan, as you know, of journaling. And often when you're afraid, I want to say this to the person who sent me the email, get yourself a journal and write about what you are afraid of. You know, I can promise you, I did this about 5 days ago. I had all these things on my mind and I journaled about my fear of failure and what if I couldn't do this and deep stuff. And I wrote it all down. And I'd never normally do this. I took it to Karen and I shared it with her. And it was so personal, I couldn't read it. I said, Kaz, can you read it? Can you just read it out? And getting so animated here, I was hitting the lectern. Did you hear that? So she read it. It was a really beautiful moment. But that journaling process of just going deep within, taking the time to journal. You know, if you go to a job interview, what am I afraid of here? Writing it down, there is a power in, and people go, but you're giving life to it. If you write about what you're afraid of, you're going to create your fear. Bollocks, that's not true. You're giving you're respecting your subconscious for a start. You're giving that deep inner self a voice, that part of you that's not sure, that part of you that's afraid. You're giving it a voice and you're letting it speak, and just getting it out on paper can help. So tons of stuff there, huh? Man, I don't want to sound arrogant, but there's a lot of gold in there. There's a lot of stuff. So I want you to just share this with people. If you've got a family member or someone that would benefit from hearing this stuff, share it with them. Grab the link. It'll be on iTunes. Come and follow me on Instagram, Jonathan_Doyle.co on Instagram. You can find me on Twitter and other places. But and get in touch with me on Instagram. Post a comment so I can follow you back, because I really like following people that listen, so I can learn more about you and just encourage you and post comments. So if you'd like me to come and speak at your business or your sporting team or your organization, flip me an email through the website, or just email me at jonathan@jonathandoyle.co. I'd love to do that. I'm really enjoying speaking at the moment. Now that I'm no longer a perfectionist, that'll freak you out. You go, well, Mom, you might book him to come and speak, and he'll just turn up in shorts and a t-shirt and do nothing. No, I'll still come and just and share passion with you. Grab a copy of the book if you haven't got one yet. It's the new version. It's really nice, beautiful new images all through it, and great stuff. So email me, post a comment under this podcast, email me and tell me what you're struggling with, and I can do a podcast about the challenges that you face. So I hope that's useful. Share it with people, post it on your Facebook feeds, your social media feeds, tell people, hey, listen to this, it's really good stuff. I love seeing it grow. We've got thousands of people now on this podcast list, and it's just so cool, the ideas are getting out there. So there you go, end of sermon. Listen to this again if you dare. If you haven't had enough of an ear bashing, listen to it one more time, because there's just so much in there. I hope it's useful. I'm Jonathan Doyle. This, once again, my friend, has been The Weekly Podcast, and I'm pumped that I'll be speaking to you again next week.